Hello, this is Zach, and you're listening to the Solidarity Journal on WAZU. That means it must be Tuesday. Thanks for tuning in. We'll have lots of news and views in the coming minutes. These are your local headlines. International Solidarity Movement member is speaking in Peoria, May 4th and 6th. We'll deliver some background on that, so you'll be sure to attend. Have you ever heard of Tim DeChristopher? Mike has an expose of this activist. Here in Peoria, our local news is under attack and prominent voices are speaking out against it. And you can too. We'll tell you how. Other talking points. We'll touch on globalization and neocolonialism. And as always, we'll keep you informed on local events in Peoria and Bloomington. Please stay tuned. This is the Solidarity Journal. It's Tuesday, April 26th. This is WAZU. Since the end of World War II, the balances of powers and nation-states in power have grown economically and at the expense of the developing world. The term developing world refers to poorer nation-states, or the Third World. In lieu of direct military political control, neo-colonialist powers are said to employ financial and trade policies to dominate less powerful countries. Those who subscribe to the concept maintain that this amounts to a de facto control over less powerful nations. De facto is Latin and refers to by the fact. In law it means in practice, but not necessarily ordained by law. So neocolonialist powers control the resources of a lesser nation and their economy for their benefit, and it isn't an operation ordained by law. It is just a matter of fact. All around the world, the old ways of colonizing have faded away. From Plymouth Rock to South Africa, from India to Australia, the colonial power that dominated the riches, people, and cultures of these nations has faded away. While surely remnants of the colonial past exist, a new colony is sprouting up within the Third World. No longer do nations in power need armies. All they need is a logo and money. For an example, Nike, an American shoe company, will establish a factory in Mexico, Korea, Pakistan, anywhere labor is cheap. Shoe sales at home in America will rise as price to the consumer goes down. Along with that, profits will rise. Nevertheless, the labor force producing the product will never see a stitch of the profits earned from their ignorance and their exploitation. I don't mean to pick on one company. Capitalist corporations seek to lower prices and increase profits all along the assembly line of production. In every field, in every effort, capitalists' goal is to decrease costs. Neocolonialist capitalists, who live and breathe in first world nations such as ours, demand that they produce a product at the expense of a labor pool in the Third World, in a nation without standards, in a nation without rights. Producing their meaningless products here at home in a nation of standards and rights would increase the cost of production and potentially decrease sales as prices to the consumer go up. These bastards will stop at nothing to lower costs. What their desire to produce in cheaper lands does to our economy is weaken it, although it seems to also strengthen it for a minority of the richest people who participate in it. What they should do is employ poor people and meet the standards and rights of our nation here at home. They do not want to suffer the blow to profits this would cause. In the short term, this would increase costs and lower profits, but in a matter of years, paying employees in America a livable wage, the increase in costs would level off. Some inflation would occur, but eventually we could all afford to consume what we produce ourselves. It is true that right now we could not afford to consume what we produce ourselves. A lot of union-busting ideology is born out of this idea that American workers demand too much and would increase prices so much that Americans couldn't afford what we produce. I have to say yes, initially, but after years of our intelligent and liberty-loving labor force was given what it wanted, incomes would go up and consumables could begin to be consumed at the rate at which the capitalists are happy. Quick, painless, short-term gains, which hurt us in the long term, are the driving force behind neocolonialism, capitalist exploitation of labor in nations that do not know any better, eventually will offer the American consumer extreme purchasing power. Even the poorest among us eventually can afford the life sold to them on the backs of exploited labor elsewhere. Sure, that American might not have a job, but that will be okay. He or she might be the same color as those that work elsewhere. One day we might just send him or her to that poor nation to work for an American company who didn't dare have the audacity to treat Americans the way they gladly treat their new colonial slaves. At the present rate, America will be one nation of employees, all employed in the service industry, a nation of McDonald's and Burger Kings, a nation of waiters and waitresses, a nation of people who don't produce anything, who only serve those who enslave the means of production elsewhere in lands without rights or standards. The majority of the undereducated, the underserved, will gladly serve these capitalists. Food and drink imported from faraway lands, clothes and entertainment sold cheap. This labor force of servants will only earn enough to keep serving. Their station will never elevate. All of this doom and gloom can be prevented if producers of products, goods and services were required, de jure, by law, to never exploit a far-off nation's labor force at the expense of labor at home. If they were made to employ skilled laborers here in America, and if the neocolonial practices were outlawed, our economy would slow in terms of short-term gains, but it would blossom in the long run. How has patience escaped American capitalist counterparts? To what extent will the servant class continue to be shackled with debt, uneducated, unemployed, and forced into a soul-depriving, dehumanizing job? I get sad when I go to a fast food place and the person taking my order cannot look me in the eyes. Their face is shadowed by a dehumanizing hat. Dressed in unflattering garb, they exist only to take my order. I refuse to participate, as do many that I know. The American worker must be respected and valued for his skill, intelligence, and their demands must be met by those who employ him or her to produce something that is sold, sold to the workers who made it, and sold to anybody who wants it. Sending jobs overseas weakens the empowered worker of America, and it must be stopped, not only for the sake of the sovereignty of developing nations, also for the sake of the sovereignty of the American citizen and our labor force. Neocolonialism and globalization must be stopped. Short-term gains should never outweigh the problems they produce for the future. What will Americans do? How long will we stand for these injustices? I don't know. History will only tell. Time will only tell. After all, this is only a Solidarity Journal at WAZU, and this is East Peoria and Peoria. This is ICC. Here's Mike with more news.
Get you a man that's a union man. Join the ladies' auxiliary. Married life ain't hard. You're packing a union card. A married man has a happy life if he's got a union wife. So you can't scare me.
I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union.
Oh, you can't scare me.
I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union until the day I die.
All right, now I want to introduce a speaker that we'll be having here in Peoria on May 4th and May 6th. Name is Jasmine Stuckey, and she will be talking about her experiences in East Jerusalem. You know, give a little background, kind of give you an idea what she'll be talking about and why you should attend. After 1948, during the Nakba, which saw the purge of the indigenous Palestinians from their land, most of these families were settled in Sheikh Jarrah by the United Nations and the Jordanian government. In these East Jerusalem neighborhoods, there has been an attempt to evict the 27 Palestinian families living there in order to establish settlements with 200 housing units for the Israeli settlers. Palestinian families who are being evicted from their homes in East Jerusalem is due to an absentee property law from 1950, which was created to protect the new Jewish state from the claims of the Palestinian refugees. It essentially stripped Palestinians of any rights to property left behind in what is now Israel if they were in enemy territory, including East Jerusalem, between November 1947 and May 1948. The courts, including the Supreme Court in Israel, upheld a 1970s ruling that the property had originally belonged to Jews. So the Palestinians' homes are being taken up by the Jewish National Fund, a internationally recognized charitable organization that raises money to fund projects that facilitates the discrimination of Palestinians in the apartheid state of Israel. And then it hands it over to Jewish settler organizations where they are sold to Israelis. However, these acts are illegal under international law. According to the Geneva Convention and the Rome Statute, an occupying power has only temporary administrative powers. But the expulsion of the occupied population and the settlement of those territories by nationals of the occupying power are considered grave violations of the Geneva Convention and hence war crimes. Furthermore, all the institutions of the United Nations, including the Security Council, have several times passed resolutions declaring that the Israeli annexation of East Jerusalem is illegal. Hence, all the decisions by the Israeli courts are essentially invalid. So the speaker, Jasmine, who worked under the International Solidarity Movement, which is a nonviolent Palestinian community group that works towards the end of the occupation, employed solidarity tactics that have come from people that are directly impacted by the occupation. So Israeli activists, Palestinians, and other ISM members would employ solidarity tactics that have come from the people directly impacted by the occupation. And they would do things like media assistance, nonviolent direct action, international accomplishment, jail support, and even like sleeping in tents, taking night watch shifts, just to make sure that nothing would happen to the Palestinian families. And the goal of their presence, ISM and Israeli activists, was to de-escalate tense and often violent conflicts and acts of vandalism committed by Jewish settlers on Palestinian residents. So that just kind of gives you an idea of what Jasmine will be speaking about. And she'll talk about some of her personal experiences as well, including how hula hooping saved her from being arrested, and learning to cook Palestinian meals and building relationships with Palestinian residents and Israeli solidarity activists. So that will be going on at the Unitarian Universalist Church here in Peoria on May 4th at 7 p.m. And also, she will speak again at the Forest Hill United Methodist Church on Friday, May 6th at 7 p.m. as well. For more information, please check out PeoriaPeace.org. And if you want more additional information, what is happening in East Jerusalem, or ISM, please check out www.en.justjlm.org. And for this ISM, check out palsolidarity.org.
That's great. We can always count on Mike to deliver us international news and views. You know, I'd like to bring it back local. This Wednesday, April 27th, there will be a community rally at 5 p.m. in East Peoria on Springfield Road, in response to the attack on local news organizations such as WEEK and WHOI. The Peoria chapter of AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, President Gary Moore, said this is going to be a great event. We're really encouraged by all the support we've received thus far. Keeping the news local and providing quality stories that the community depends on is what this rally is all about. We couldn't think of a better place than the station. As you all know, that's the WEEK headquarters, that's the station on Springfield Road. Vice President of AFTRA, Eric Shangross, says, "Bring your lawn chairs, your whistles, your voices, and your ears. We promise to deliver the news in a way that's never been done before." AFTRA is locked in a labor dispute with WEEK and WHOI, which is owned by Granite Broadcasting Company. Last month, the company presented the union with its last, best, and final offer. Union members say the company's offer is rife with takeaways and have scheduled a vote for Friday, April 22nd. As some of you may know, earlier this year, AFTRA, which again, I want to reiterate, this is the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, alerted the public of a company proposal that would allow Granite to outsource its work to another city. While WEEK's general manager has pledged not to move local operations, the jurisdiction proposal is still on the bargaining table. The community sees that this is not just about us. The hard-working people of Central Illinois need to know that their best interests are being threatened by a company that cares less about them than it does about profits. The American Federation of Television and Radio Artists would love to invite you to come up Wednesday, April 27th, in East Peoria, on Springfield Road at the WEEK News Station, to stand with them against the oppressions of the Granite Broadcasting Company in their labor dispute. Union members and faces that you've recognized from local TV news will all be in attendance. You'll be able to speak with them and find out what this is really all about. Don't forget, that's Wednesday, April 27th in East Peoria, 5 o'clock on Springfield Road at the WEEK News Station. Most likely during the 5 o'clock news. Sounds like it. So please attend. Their fight is just to keep the news local, to keep local news local, make sure it's produced by local people and with the interest of the local community. That's all they're fighting for in this union labor dispute. So please be in attendance and stand with them, because that's a noteworthy cause to rise up for. Saturday, April 30th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., the 7th Annual Earth Day Celebration in Peoria Heights will commence. You'll have your opportunity to think globally and act locally. Peruse the numerous booths, locate local resources, and learn what you can do to make a difference. Enjoy live music and good food, hands-on demos, kids and crafts, and face painting, and much more. You can even enter a raffle. Register to win door prizes, and don't miss your opportunity to enjoy our annual Earth Day sale in the Trailhead Nature Store at Forest Park Nature Center. Don't miss the 7th Annual Earth Day Celebration in Peoria Heights at Forest Park Nature Center. For more information, call 309-686-3360. Don't miss Saturday, the 30th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., 7th Annual Earth Day Celebration at Forest Park Nature Center. And as you heard Mike talk about, the guest speaker from the International Solidarity Movement, she'll be here in Peoria May 4th and 6th, speaking Wednesday and Friday at Forest Hill United Methodist Church, 706 East Forest Hill Avenue, Peoria, Illinois. And if Mike's talking points haven't given you an idea to attend, I encourage you to.
Thanks, Zach. I really hope our listeners attend the after rally in East Peoria to support our local news organizations, WHOI and WEEK. Now, I know some of our environmental listeners may know the name Tim DeChristopher, but for those who don't, let me tell you a little bit about him. With Earth Day just passing last week, Tim DeChristopher is founder of Peaceful Uprisings, and last month was found guilty for interfering in a Bureau of Land Management and oil gas auction. Tim started bidding on leases that would have used federal lands, including areas bordering national parks and monuments in Utah. As a last attempt to stop this death machine, Tim walked into the federal auction and was mistaken for a bidder. So after giving a bidder's paddle, he began bidding on leases, making sure that he was able to outbid everyone in the room from getting the land leases. When it became apparent that Tim was not a genuine bidder, BLM agents removed him, but he had already outbid 13 parcels covering more than 100,000 acres worth $1.7 million. This disrupted the auction, forcing BLM to postpone the final decisions on leases, but by the time it would resume, the Obama administration would be in office. Soon after taking office, Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar canceled the results and criticized the previous administration for allowing it in the first place. But the Obama administration still viewed Tim's actions as criminal and pressed ahead on federal criminal charges of interfering with a government auction and making false representations. In court, Tim's defense for his noble actions was a necessity defense, stating that his actions were justified because of the moral imperative of stopping the destruction of the environment. Not surprisingly, the courts did not see it this way. Even the judge overseeing the case asked Tim, "Well, if he thinks he can just do whatever he wants to stop climate change, what if he's concerned about emissions coming out of the vehicles and he blows up a car with somebody in it? Isn't that exactly the same thing?" And so it ended with a guilty verdict, having Tim face up to 10 years in prison. and a $750,000 fine. The legal prosecution's argument won, saying that Tim should have worked within the system and filed with an objection and let the system do its work. But one detail that was left out of the trial was that Tim was able to raise the money through funding that was needed to buy the land he bidded on, but the BLM rejected his offer. The land parcels that Tim disrupted from being bought is just one battle of the war on the environment. And it is a war, and the only war we could really say that we're winning. And when we do finally destroy this environment, and when everything implodes, the corporate culture will be seen for what it is, and that is an entity controlled by a power elite that does not care for the well-being of others, but only to make profits with no limits. They have taught us that the health of the economy is more important than the health of the environment. Even though once we've destroyed our environment, we will no longer have a choice, and that will be our end game. We must challenge this system, not with pretty words or begging those who run it into the ground at high speeds, but with direct action. Tim's actions are one in many cases of nonviolent tactics that can be achieved to these ends. We can no longer be intimidated by those who rule us with fear and take what they want with violence. Tim DeChristopher and many others like him who realize this are setting an example of what must be done. We must unite in numbers and no longer ignore the injustices that is happening to our environment and us. Defiance is something that cannot be taken away from us and is what will keep us alive.
And you've been listening to WAZU, Peoria's one and only Pacifica Radio affiliate. This is the Solidarity Journal. We thank you for tuning in. Catch us next week for more news and views. Have a great day.
Till the end of this story, when it all gets written again. When it all gets written again. And things will never be the same. And things will never be the same. And things will never be the same. Oh, you can feel that constant.